Welcome once again to Cinemaholics, the Major Motion podcast, where we talk about the biggest and the best films coming to theaters and streaming online. From the San Francisco Bay Area, I'm John Negroni, film editor for InBetweenDrafts.com. From Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, he's a news and entertainment writer over at Collider. It's Will Ashton. Hey, Will.
Hey!
Will, are you excited?
I am excited.
Why are you excited?
Well, I'm excited because we have some friends on the show.
Oh, I thought you were going to say you were excited because it's 2023.
Sure, why not?
Yeah, we're starting the sixth year of Cinemaholics.
Is it the sixth? I thought last year was the sixth.
Oh, was it? Is it seventh year of Cinemaholics?
No, it's the sixth year. I think you are right. Yeah, because I miscounted.
You misremembered because the show hasn't been memorable for you.
Well, no, it's because I know that our show and another podcast of mine, A Ogre Toads Ogre, started around the same time. And that information might become relevant in
a
little bit.
Yeah, you're filibustering. All I want to do is introduce our guests, and you're just going off of tangents. So we should go ahead and cut to the chase, huh?
Yeah.
Do you want to do the honors?
Sure.
You want to do it?
Yeah. So we have once again back on the show my good friends and fellow co-hosts on the podcast Ain't Ogre, Toads Ogre, Matt Serafini.
Matt Serafini. I was trying to do it with you.
And Chris Sheridan.
And Chris Sheridan.
It's lovely to be here as always.
Absolutely.
Hey, guys.
Hey.
The reason we brought these two ringers in, these two heavyweight champions, is because not only because we had them on recently and we're addicted, but also because we're talking about a movie that is very much related to It Ain't Ogre Till It's Ogre. And Will and I agreed, you know what? We might as well. They're experts. They've watched Shrek and Shrek 2 so many times, it kind of fits. Because we're talking about Puss in Boots, The Last Wish. Puss in Boots.
And I was breaking down the door to be a guest on this episode.
Yeah, Chris was very excited and very passionate about being a guest on this show.
It's true. If you listen to the recently released season finale of It Ain't Ogre Till It's Ogre, you will hear Chris talk about how he's saving his like real thoughts on the movie for this podcast. And here we are.
That would have been sad if we had been like, Chris, I'm so sorry. we accidentally invited on, like, I don't know, who's a famous film critic that would like replace Chris Sheridan?
Werner Herzog?
Mike Myers.
Wow. I didn't realize those two got into film criticism. I'm very curious to hear what Werner Herzog has to say about the current state of film.
He should do a show with like Mike Myers, and then
yeah, what would that show be? Werner Herzog and Mike Myers having a Siskel and Ebert type review show.
Yes.
Well, Werner, I think it's kind of rich what you have to say about Tar, considering what you said about Gemini Man. I don't know, something like that. I wanted to start things off with a question before we talk about Puss in Boots: The Last Wish. So I didn't watch the first Puss in Boots. And I watched this sequel. Well, that's my first question. Is this really a sequel? Do you guys consider it as such?
Not really.
Well, yeah, because
I guess Kitty Softpaws.
Yeah, Kitty Softpaws.
Yeah, I didn't know who she was, but people were like, "We know who you are," and I was like, "Wait,
yeah, she is established in the previous one, which is a prequel. So that film takes place prior to
a prequel."
Events Shrek of the Shrek too. Film. So if you were to watch all these films in order, you would have to kind of bookend the Puss in Boots movies. Like,
okay,
Puss in Boots 1, Shrek 1, Shrek 2, Shrek the
Third. Wait, are you sure Puss in Boots is before Shrek 1? You said before Shrek 2. Or do you think it's because like the Shrek 2 is like right after Shrek 1? What do you think?
Well, as this movie establishes, it would seem that Puss in Boots had upwards of 5 lives prior to his time with
Kitty Southpaws?
Well, with Shrek and the gang.
Oh.
So.
Wait, how do you know that?
Well, because, I don't know. Are we allowed to talk about spoiler stuff, or did you want to introduce the show?
Oh, in the movie, they established that? Oh, no, that's okay. That's okay.
Yeah, yeah.
I would consider this a sequel in the sense that the James Bond movies are sequels.
Okay, like it's shared lore, but it's certainly, it's like its own thing. It's like an anthology.
Yeah, I concur.
Yeah, like it's, The Last Wish doesn't build directly off of anything in the first movie besides Kitty Softpaws, but in that same vein, you know, yeah. Moneypenny or Q or whatever in the James Bond movies, like you don't need to watch Puss in Boots 1 to enjoy or understand Puss in Boots 2.
Did Salma Hayek voice Kitty Softpaws in the last one?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Okay, my next question is the first Puss in Boots a good movie? Because again, it came out 2011, I want to say. I didn't watch it. I was too busy.
It's fine.
Yeah, it's fine.
I was going to say, this is kind of a mild point of contention because on the, what was that, the August episode that we did for Aogre Tilt Ogre Season 6, we decided to, well, initially this movie was supposed to come out in September, right? Am I remembering correctly? Mm-hmm. And it got delayed to Christmas. For the big awards push that it's going to have. And so we were planning initially to have our, you know, Shrek breakdown shortly before this movie came out. The movie got delayed, but obviously you were going to be on our November episode, John, so we decided to keep it in August. And when we watched all the movies together, I think Matt and I were favorable, if not like enthused by Puss in Boots 1, while Chris was more critical than both of us. I think I remember him even saying that he preferred Shrek Forever After over that film.
Yes. I think the first Puss in Boots, by the time it figures out what kind of movie it wants to be, it's the end of the movie.
Interesting. Here's my other question, because I looked into this a little bit and I found out that Chris Miller was the director of the first Puss in Boots. He also directed Shrek the Third. And he's been like working with DreamWorks on a lot of their stuff for years and years. I think he voices the Magic Mirror in Shrek, right?
He voices, yes? Does he?
I believe he does. That said, I was just kind of curious because people say that Shrek the Third isn't good. People say Puss in Boots is whatever. So why is he going to, he's the one who's going to be doing the new Smurfs movie, right? In 2025.
Is that another new continuity for the Smurfs or is that like...
I think it's another. It's like the DreamWorks, like it's.
Oh, DreamWorks is doing Smurfs. I don't think I knew that. That's pretty cool.
I'm pretty sure it's DreamWorks.
It's kind of like he's like, "Hey, DreamWorks, can I direct another movie?" And they're like, "Here, have Smurfs or whatever. Go away."
I just assumed it was DreamWorks because he's attached to it, but I think it would be Sony otherwise, wouldn't it? Because then they do the live action ones, or am I forgetting?
They did both the live action ones and the Lost Village. Yeah,
mm-hmm. It could be that he's doing it for Sony and he's just kind of moving around and dancing. Yeah, I don't know for sure, actually. But he's always just done DreamWorks stuff.
It'd be weird they made a Smurfs movie in the animation style of Spider-Verse, if that's their intent. Mm.
Do you think that's where... That's my other question. Sorry, I have like 1,000 questions. Because this new Puss in Boots movie has like the Spider-Verse animation, right? And then Matt could probably describe it better than us. But do you think that that's going to be the house style now that Puss in Boots 2 is successful? Like that, it, like people are like, this movie rules? Do you think it's going to become like more common, maybe? Like maybe not in
I think more common. I don't think house style necessarily, but
you think house style will still be, because like Bad Guys has its own style too, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think that the name of the game is just stylization, mm-hmm. and the ability to have stuff that looks different. Like I think that's going to be the biggest impact from Spider-Verse is that now you can just make animated movies look a lot cooler than
here's
before.
The thing. Because Matt, I know you and I had that 3-hour conversation that one time about the opening DreamWorks logo stuff that they created.
Of course.
Yeah. Will and Chris aren't aware of this, but isn't that going to be kind of weird? Because when that thing goes through and it's different animation styles, what do you do then? Like, isn't it kind of weird? Also, are they going to add Puss in Boots now that
the bad guys are already in there?
Yeah.
And they, I think, are just animated in their style. And I would even say that the Trolls movie kind of have their own animation style.
Texture is kind of, different. Yeah. But then, okay, you brought up, Matt, when we were talking about this for 3.5, maybe 4 hours, that isn't this going to kill people trying to do like a shared DreamWorks universe, you know, kind of like the Pixar theory, but for DreamWorks movies, people love doing that.
I think it's just going to contribute to it.
Yeah.
With different animation styles, it's going to be chaos.
Exactly. But have you seen The Boss Baby?
A few times, yeah.
The movie is the definition of chaos.
I would counter that Marvel Studios has animated projects and those are different styles, but they are in the same universe.
Well, He's the king of debate class. That's him. That's Matt Serafini. So, Will, we've been kind of dancing around a little bit, talking animation and going back and forth. But I want to start with you in terms of Puss in Boots: The Last Wish. Because I almost want to ask what your expectations were and if they were met. But here's the thing. Your expectations must have been kind of high, right? Because the reviews were super positive, like way before you saw this movie. I think I saw some like pretty positive, like right before I saw it, but it wasn't like pervasive like it is now.
Yeah, I mean, I talked about this a little bit in our finale. It just came out for Ian Ogre, but I was, I guess, more kind of bemused and kind of puzzled by the response. Like kind of more like...
Why puzzled?
Well, because like I guess I kept my expectations in check when they announced the film and that was coming out later this year. I was just like, okay, it's another Puss in Boots movie. At first, I didn't even think this was actually going to get made because this was like on, you know, like their docket of films to be made for whatever, like a decade or so. They just kept teasing the idea of like, hey, we're going to make a sequel to Puss in Boots. Like, okay, if you say so.
That movie came out. Talking about it for almost a decade. I mean, more than a decade, actually, yeah.
Well, and Puss in Boots: The Last Wish sounds like a direct-to-video title.
Sure.
Well, do you know what the original title was going to be? It was going to be Puss in Boots 2, Nine Lives and 40 Thieves.
Yeah.
I don't know if you're lying about that or not.
No, that was the actual title.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I usually do lie, but that's in this terrible. Case I'm not.
That's a terrible title. Yeah.
Well, they did change it, to be fair.
Yeah.
They hinted at Shrek possibly being in it. They just have like a little cameo, a baby cameo.
Right.
He is.
It's pretty early in the movie. I don't know. Is it?
Yeah, I would say territory. Yeah,
he's
I'm
opening.
Just trying to preserve the experience of Joe Popcorn in the theater. You know,
he's in the DreamWorks thing.
Yeah, exactly. He shows up in the DreamWorks logo. Yeah, that's what Chris is talking about. Nothing else.
Get off my back.
I guess for me, I was just sort of confused when I was seeing like IGN and these other publications like giving, you know, effusive praise to the film. Not that I expect the film to get bad reviews, but I was just kind of like, okay, like why is this movie causing middle-aged film critics to like have an existential crisis? Like it's Puss in Boots too. Like what's the big deal here? And watch
not
the film
middle-aged. Yeah. I saw a lot of like Gen Z critics were latching on, yeah.
I'm not trying to generalize here. I feel like it's just more bizarre when I see like, you know, like a 45-year-old man being like, this movie, you know, gave me a deep existential crisis. And it's like,
it fixed my marriage.
Right. It fixed my marriage. It changed the oil in my car.
My kids are talking to me again.
My skin is cleared.
Remember when that was a thing for like 6 months? Like people with their review blurbs would be like that. That was fun. Mm-hmm. We should go back to that.
It fixed the relationship I have with my father, you know, just saying things like that about Puss in Boots too. And yeah, so I was just kind of like, well, I mean, I was already planning to see it, to be sure. Like, I'm just like, okay, I hope it's pretty good. And then I see these reviews, I'm like, okay, now I'm just curious to know what this movie is. Like, why are people having this deep-seated reaction to what I thought would be kind of a throwaway film? I guess my expectations weren't too high because I wasn't putting that much stock into them, but I was aware of them, and they certainly kind of checkered how I was planning to look at the film.
Yeah, my expectations were pretty low because this was before I think like it started coming out that people were like, this is the one, this is the movie. I want to go around the room one by one and everybody say how many lives they think this movie has as an indication of their subjective opinion of like the quality of the movie. So out of nine lives, Chris Sheridan, you first.
Eight and a half
lives.
Yeah,
Fellini would be proud.
Yeah,
consider, is that like on purpose? Like,
is what on purpose?
The 8.5 reference to Federico Fellini in the movie.
No,
kind of being
no, it's not. But nine is too indulgent.
You were like, put the brakes on.
Yeah,
Chris.
It's like, it's not like this movie is Avatar 2, The Way of Water or whatever.
All right. Similar sequel naming style, actually. Matt Serafini, how many lives do you think Puss in Boots: The Last Wish has?
Just to are we rating it or are we like?
I think it's like a choose your own adventure kind of thing.
Okay, okay. Yeah. Then I'm gonna say.
I am also kind of confused by this.
I like that
Chris. Chris jumped in with two feet, and I always respect that. But I'm gonna say seven because I don't know what we're doing, and seven's my favorite number. So that's where I'm landing.
You're capturing the spirit of it just right, I think.
Cool.
All right, well, time for your confident answer.
I guess I'm gonna go ahead and give it six lives.
Six lives. Wow. I'm gonna give it five lives. Because that's how many Puss in Boots has at one point in the movie.
Sure.
I'm just trying to get a sense of like what you guys think, because it would take a while, I think, for us to like really like unpack it one by one. Because I got to be honest, I'm kind of confused because I watched the movie and I was like, oh, you know, that's nice. I like the opening song because it's a bop. I gotta just say this, and you guys are probably gonna fuss and frown at me, but I don't like the animation in it at all. I don't. I think it's kind of choppy and weird.
I also think a lot of frowning.
Yeah, I think the story is pretty cool, and I think some of the action's cool, but I don't like the voice acting either, with it like a few exceptions. I really, really don't like Antonio Banderas sounds really tired in this, and I hate the accent that he's putting on. It's too thick and annoying, and I think John Mulaney was miscast. That's my big thing.
You gotta realize this is his ninth life here, so he's no you know spring kitten, you know.
But it's there's like one or two levels with the voice, and he's doing his like puss and boss, and he's doing that the entire movie, and people keep saying it's like this movie has so much emotion. I didn't feel the emotion because I felt like the performance was just very like samey to me the whole way through. But I feel like I'm in the minority on this one.
Well, in fairness, I mean, not to like immediately attack your argument, but like he is playing a character that he's now been playing for 18 years. So he can't really just change the portrayal of it. And like, it's, I don't know about Chris and Will, but I think it's pretty consistent with how it's been with the other Puss in Boots appearances.
Yeah,
well, you guys know already that I don't like Puss in Boots' character anymore.
Right, so that's true.
That has a lot to do with it, probably.
Yeah.
I will grant that the number of times that he's like, I am Puss in Boots, and I'm like, yeah, we know. And it's just like, at one point in the movie, I'm like, okay, yeah, he's saying it again or whatever, but that's one of the only mild quibbles I have with the movie. Like, I don't know, John, if you've listened to the finale of the It Ain't Ogre podcast yet, but
I got all the way up to when Smooth Lightning has some IP
is,
you know, mishmashing with Lightning McQueen's catchphrase, and I was okay. Like, whoa,
is Smooth Lightning in the room with us right now
playing it dangerous?
Hey everybody, it's hey! Me, Smooth whoa. Lightning.
How did Smooth Lightning get in here?
I don't
this
know
house is locked.
I don't know.
Well, you're allowed in here, but no catchphrases, please.
Did Smooth Lightning, did you like the movie?
Ka-chow!
Oh, boy.
Oh, man. I'm going to have to try to edit that out.
I'm going to say that's probably a negative review if that's quoting Cars. It's such a Pixar franchise, so that would take that as a negative, like a thumbs down.
Wait,
for
why would that be a negative?
And the craziest thing is he just vanished.
Oh, wow.
Whoa. Yeah, that's
like,
true.
There was a strike of lightning, and smoothly he was gone.
It was like weird. It was like motion smoothing.
Yeah, yeah. Which is not how the movie's action is.
But no, I was enormously favorable on the movie, as I mentioned in the final minutes of our finale. But I'm in terms of the animation, John, what did you think of Into the Spider-Verse?
I thought the animation was really great there. Okay. I think it really worked for that movie. There was something about the animation in this one where I just think that this world just doesn't lend itself as well to. I think what the reason it worked for Spider-Verse for me at least was the comic book nature of it. And I actually thought like whenever the scenes were kind of wallowing in the spectacle of like Miles Morales donning the costume for the first time, jumping off the building, the music and the soundtrack. Like it lended itself out, it lended itself to a really theatrical, you know, operatic moment. And this, it's like really just frenzied. I think like there's a lot of choppiness to it. There's a lot of like, I think it would have worked better if it had been a little bit more self-aware, a little bit more like, I don't know, funny, at least like using humor in a way to kind of make the animation pop. But instead, I thought it was kind of a melodramatic comedy and I didn't like the comedy itself anyway. So I don't know. I had trouble with it. I know. I'm no one's more disappointed than me. I want to join the boys. I want to join the cool cats.
I mean, like this. When I saw the trailer for Puss in Boots 2, The Last Wish, I was kind of concerned. Like, I was a little like, okay, is this going to be...
It's just Puss in Boots, The Last Wish. There's no 2.
Well, you know what? I'm putting my own spin on it, bud. This is...
Who do you think you are, Chris Miller?
Exactly.
This was directed, by the way, by Joel Crawford, for those who aren't...
Yeah. Who did Croods, the second one, whatever that one's called.
New Age?
New Age, Croods, a New Age, which is not a great film.
And he's also a story artist for many of the DreamWorks films, Kung Fu Panda, I think B-Movie, a lot of the really good ones, Rise of the Guardians. And he did do a non-DreamWorks movie, a couple of them. He was story artist for SpongeBob, Sponge Out of Water, which is a horrible movie, I think, and the Lego movie too. What?
I said, excuse you.
I know. I'm just coming left and right. Chris entered this podcast
attacking Matt.
Chris was like, you know what? I like talking to John about movies. Usually we agree. But yeah, Sponge Out of Water really bugged me. And I'm a mega fan of this first SpongeBob movie.
Me too.
I still think you guys should have done that as a season. I would have joined you. I would have like tried to muscle my way in.
I suggested it.
Yeah, I was me. I put the kibosh on the SpongeBob movie.
You guys should have just been like, well, then we'll take a hike. And then put me into the, and they don't stop coming and they don't stop. Chris being like, I'm ready.
Yeah. but no, I was going to say, I mean, I went into the movie worried that the animation style was going to be very jarring. But I feel like that first scene kind of won me over for the animation style. It had that kind of storybook quality that helped it stand out and made it seem a little bit more distinctive.
See, I didn't think it was storybook. You guys thought it was a storybook kind of feel? That's what I thought it was going to be.
Well, that's what I think they're going for. Like, it made more sense for me to see this animation style in this than it did in, like, The Bad Guys, which is a film I like fine, but I felt like it fit the style of this one maybe a little bit more than that.
See, I gotta disagree with that. I think Bad Guys way better in general than this movie.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I thought that one was fine. I thought that was just kind of forgettable, but you know, I thought this was a
Will, you don't understand, they're bad and they're guys.
Yeah, but
go ahead.
No, I was just gonna say, I mean, I'm kind of surprised you seem to be having these kind of hot takes where You are pro the 48 FPS for Avatar 2, and then you are anti the animation of Puss in Boots, The Last Wish. So, yeah, I don't know what's going on.
I would say, having seen Avatar both in the high frame rate and normal frame rate, I was bothered a lot more by the Avatar frame rate than I was with Puss in Boots. Like, I will grant that I think that it could have been, they could have been a little more clever about it and they could have integrated it into the story or something in some way. Like, and I agree that it works better in Spider-Verse because of the comic book aspect. But it didn't bother me by any means. I thought it worked just fine in this, whereas Avatar was jarring.
Yeah. And I thought it, I mean, Matt and I saw Puss in Boots together and in 3D. And I thought with the 3D, it really popped, like that animation, like the like mix of 2D and 3D really helped make the like characters stand out in the foreground, and you know, it made
this
the 3D.
The first Puss in Boots
was the first Puss in Boots one? for this new one.
Okay. Yeah. I was gonna say, because I remember seeing Shrek Forever After in 3D.
I do believe the first Puss in Boots was also in 3D, because that was 2011.
Yeah,
and the 3D craze was going around. Yeah,
We forgot to mention that originally this movie did have one of the directors of Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, Bob Prichetti. The conceit of it when they brought him in was like, yeah, let's do Spider-Verse, but with Puss in Boots. And then they kind of like shook things up a while after that. So here we are now. And I'm sorry I'm being so mean to the movie, guys. I just don't know what to do about it.
This is a very random thought, but since it's a podcast, I feel I should utter it. I want an edit of Lose Yourself where they do Mom Spaghetti, but they say Bob Prichetti.
Anyway, so I want to hear more of what you guys like about it, because like, I think the trouble I have is like, I like the idea of the story, you know, Puss in Boots is down to his last life. I like the construction of the villain, of like the big bad wolf that's chasing him and like genuinely terrifying villain. I like that it's picking up after the main Shrek movie. So it feels a little bit more, I think, in a time and place, it's kind of interesting for like the Shrek movies. That's the basic setup, is he's trying to sort of like take it easy, retire, stop taking all these risks, you know? And of course, trouble chases him. And a couple more things I dislike that I got to squeeze in here. I don't like Kitty Soft Paws. I think she's kind of annoying, but she's not as annoying as Berito, the therapy dog, voiced by Harvey Guillen. I don't like him. But you know who I do like in this movie? And I wish the whole movie was kind of constructed around them. Chris already knows. I can see the twinkle in his eye. That's right. It's Goldilocks and the Three Bears. I would have much rather they be the main characters, because I thought they were really fun and interesting. And the voice work was actually really good for them. But I don't know.
Yeah, my biggest qualm... Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Chris.
I was going to say Ray Winstone as Papa Bear was a genius casting move.
It's perfect. No notes. He must have called them and been like, don't mess this up. Hire me.
Hey, I want to be Papa Bear.
My biggest qualm with the Goldilocks and the Three Bears in this movie, and I think Will knows this, is that in the first Shrek movie, we see the Three Bears, and we actually even see that Mama Bear gets turned into a carpet in Lord Farquaad's castle.
Yeah.
And this is confirmed to take place post-Shrek.
Mm-hmm.
And so what's going on? Are there just two sets of Three Bears? How does that work? That's my only problem. It's not a real problem, yeah, but it's a problem.
Clones.
And I guess we should note that the three of us, Matt, Chris, and myself, we each individually made bingo cards for the film based on our predictions for what we thought may or may not happen in the film. And that thought that Matt just produced was on his bingo card. Like, he was so confident that he thought that would be something that would be addressed or a throwaway line.
Off in some way. Oh, yeah. Like, oh, you used to be a carpet.
Right. And we should note that none of us got bingo, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. But we both, I think all three of us got close, were it not for like one slot.
Right.
Yeah. So I guess, John, you missed out.
I wasn't invited.
Yeah.
This is exactly the thing, though, because like, even though I like those characters, you know what? I much prefer the Three Bears and that kind of humor from Shrek, because that kind of Shrek stuff, it had attitude. There was an edge to it. And this, to me, just feels very like glossy, uber DreamWorks modern era. And I get why they're doing it. It's more marketable. They're trying to be Illumination. They're trying to actually sell some tickets. I get it.
You don't think, Horner stuff has... Mm-hmm. I feel like that has more edge than the Goldilocks stuff.
I didn't like that character at all.
I feel like the Goldilocks stuff kind of feels like, what are you doing? Like an afterthought from like Rise of the Guardians or something.
I can kind of agree with that.
So the one thing I like is the one thing you guys are like, mm-mm.
Okay. Or you could say that the things that we like are all things that you didn't like.
Right, exactly.
That's what it seems like. What happened? Did we watch two different cuts? But okay, we can get into more. I do want to actually hear what you guys actually like about the movie. Will, I feel like you've probably got a little speech planned. I'm ready. I'm going to put myself on mute because I just want to soak it in, and I'm going to grab my popcorn right now. Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I was kind of getting into it before, but yeah, I mean, my expectations for the film were, I guess, curious more than anything. I just wasn't quite sure what about this film was garnering the response it was getting. And I think I was, you know, even though my expectations were, I guess, a little bit higher than they would have been otherwise based on the reviews, I was pretty pleasantly surprised what we got here. I think this is one of the better installments we've gotten, probably the best we got from the Shrek franchise post Shrek 2. You know, I don't know if I'd rank it above the second Shrek or not, but I do think that
that would be heresy. I would shut this podcast down immediately.
But I mean, I will say that I do like that this movie, it felt a lot more inspired than I was expecting. It had some, like I said before, I thought some really fun and zippy animation. I thought the voice performances were actually pretty heartfelt and sincere. I enjoyed the new characters for the most part. I thought Jack Horner was a pretty... I agree with you in the sense that, like, I thought Mulaney's casting was a little weird initially, but he kind of won me over as the character went along. And there is a side character that's introduced with him that I think is quite easily the MVP of the film. And I guess we can talk about that a little bit more towards the end, because it might be a spoiler, depending on how you look at it. But, yeah, I mean, I thought it had a lot going for it, and I really appreciate, I think, above all else, that it is able to be pretty funny and have some really strong action beats, but it also deals with this mortality plot in a way that doesn't feel like it's shortchanging it. Or, you know, it feels accessible to children and to adults in a way that I feel like doesn't downplay the heaviness of it, but doesn't feel like too grim that a child would be unable to engage with the film. And I feel like that's something that is really hard to pull off. And I think that's something that the filmmakers deserve a lot of credit for. I don't think it's like, you know, I don't think it's tackling a lot of very deep things. Like, I don't think it's on the par with some of the Pixar movies during their heyday, but I really found myself pretty impressed with the film. And while I might be less enthused than Chris and maybe to a lesser extent Matt, I think I can easily appreciate what this movie is and what it does. And if it's not my favorite of the year in terms of animation, or one of my favorite Shrek movies compared to the first two Shreks, I can certainly think it's a good step forward for not only DreamWorks as a brand, but where the Shrek franchise may go from this point forward.
I think I figured it out. I think I figured out my problem. And I'm doing this now because I know Matt's going to eviscerate me with his debate school tactics. But here it is, because I was thinking about it, and I'm thinking about what I like about those Shrek movies, and they felt like such a middle finger to the Disney formula, the Disney of the 90s. And I think what's bugging me is that this Puss in Boots movie that's ostensibly in the Shrek universe, it feels Disney to me. Like, it feels like it could easily just have the Disney logo in front of it. The way that it, I don't know, it just comes off as like bubble gum. And I know you guys just want to, well, you know, I see the pitchforks. I see I'm the ogre. I'm in the swamp. But you know what? That's my swamp.
I mean, I think the reason those first two Shrek movies work is that I think it balances that sort of snarky humor with a genuine, like, soulful heart and some, like, you know, great characters. And I feel like it's more about that balance that this movie, I think, pulls off. Now, I don't think it has like the attachment to fairy tale lore and like playing against tropes and expectations in quite the same way as the original Shrek films, but I think it's also doing something that feels a little bit more modern, a little bit more inspired, and something that feels like, because that was like the big question for us, I guess, when we knew that there was going to be not only this film but a fifth Shrek. It's like, well, how is that going to translate into the modern age, because it's such a like early to mid 2000s thing. And I think that was kind of part of its downfall, was that like by the time we got the Shrek Forever After and that first Puss in Boots, it just kind of felt tired, and you know, it just didn't have what was so unique with that first movie, which is that it's so fresh, so irreverent, but also has like a big beating heart, and it feels very inspired and soulful. And so I think this, that's why I find this to be an encouraging step forward for the franchise, if it is a sign of what's to come. But I don't know. At the same time, I'm not, I guess, entirely against what your criticisms are of the film, but we'll have to discuss that a little bit more later.
Yeah, I agree with Will. I think the first Shrek movie came at a time when the Disney formula was completely dominating the market. So you got your Disney movies, and then you got this new PG animated fantasy movies. Like, here's a joke about testicles. And but then that's kind of like now that the whole landscape of animated movies and comedies has kind of changed a little bit, like the type of humor and formula that Shrek brought isn't really the fresh thing anymore. So I think if Puss in Boots: The Last Wish was to come out with that same kind of like, oh, it's a mix of children, adult humor and not really much else beyond that, it wouldn't have been as interesting as it is.
Well, I have to turn it over to Matt Serafini, person here with the best mustache. Matt Scarafini is also called.
Well, I agree with both Will and Chris. Especially Chris took the words out of my mouth about the aspect of like what the general like Disney, what's popular at the time. Because I mean, that's the thing, we have to remember that this movie came out what, 21 years after the first Shrek movie? That's two whole decades. A lot can happen culturally in that time, but I don't know. I mean, I don't think I was like quite as positive as Chris was. I'm definitely not nearly as negative as John was. I think I'm most in line with Will. But I don't know. I thought it was a sweet movie, and I thought that the place that it really soared was the heart. And I liked that. I mean, there's this trend, I feel like, in movies about lately in the past 5 years or so, where it's like anti-toxic masculinity and like pro just being a person, if that makes sense. And I feel like Puss in Boots kind of learns that lesson in this, where he's just like, oh, sometimes it's okay just to have family.
SJW.
Does that make what's yes? Yeah, I don't know. Is this making any sense?
Yeah.
Puss
yeah.
in Boots, you sir are canceled.
Puss in Boots is the Lydia Tarr of the Shrek universe.
Cancel culture's coming for Puss in Boots.
And not yeah. a minute too soon, if you ask me.
Yeah, I don't know. I liked it. I thought the animation looked good. It was bright and colorful and just visually pleasing. And then I thought that the story was there. Like, because I think there is a version of this movie where the animation looks great and the story is not there. And I think that movie is called Trolls World Tour. But I don't know, that was kind of a half-assed. I gotta say,
Trolls World Tour kind of holds up second viewing. I gotta be that guy.
Does it? I only saw it once.
It was playing at like this county fair and we were just hanging out. Maybe it was because I was drinking, but we kind of really fell into it. I gotta tell you.
It's better when you're drinking.
I watched it once very early in the pandemic and I just don't really remember it, but I remember it looking really good. Dude, so that's the source of that criticism.
I think that movie caught us like when we were at our most sort of like closed in lockdown, like who needs these bright colors at a time like this.
Trolls 2 was like the pandemic movie for a while.
Yeah, because it was like PVOD, it was like that big, you know.
Yeah. It was the first one that did that, right?
Yeah, one of them. It's the one that established a $20 POV price tag.
Okay.
The Vin Diesel thing one might have done that too, but maybe not that expensive.
I think
Vin Diesel?
Trolls announced. He's talking about Bloodshot.
I was going to say Blood something, right? Yeah.
I'm pretty sure Trolls World Tour was the first one to announce it, but Bloodshot was in theaters for like a week or two, and then they put like all the movies that were in theaters for like a week or a month, and then they
put them on or whatever it was.
Well, they did the VOD thing. That was like for Invisible Man. They did that. They did that for The Hunt and The Way Back, and like all those other movies that had like a week long release during the early days of the pandemic.
The Way Back.
Yeah, the Ben Affleck.
Ben Affleck is a sad drunk basketball coach.
Every time I hear about the Ben Affleck, The Way Back, I think of the Colin Farrell, The Way Back.
Yes, that's Pierre Weir. Different film. Yeah. That's pretty good. Yeah. That's a pretty good movie.
I think of The Way Back.
I was going to say, I thought you were going to talk about The Way, Way Back.
Yeah. It's like, I think of like The Way, Way Back as a sequel to either The Way Back with Ben Affleck or The Way Back with
Are you sure we're not talking about Peter The Way Weir. Back Machine, the internet website?
Right.
Movies are confusing.
You know what, and I gotta be upfront because some people are probably listening and they're like, well, who am I gonna side with? Am I gonna side with these three, you know, upstanding gentlemen, the talk of their individual towns, or am I gonna side with John, who doesn't make any sense? Here's the thing with me. I have all these hangups with Puss in Boots. I have all these hangups with Antonio Banderas. He's Zorro to me. He's my hero. I love like movies like Pain and Gain, which are kind of, I know people were saying this is like the animated version of Pain and Gain. Like, okay, whatever. It's a weird comparison, but I think I just have this issue with like Antonio Banderas.
Pain and Glory, right?
Pain and Glory. Thank you.
Yeah.
I was going to say, what is this? Pain and Gain is a Michael Pay
movie. Yeah.
Pain and Glory, which is a good movie.
The movie where the Rock grills a hand on a grill or whatever.
Well, people mention it too, because like Selma Hayek is also in that, but okay. I think what it is for me is that The Mask of Zorro is such a beloved film for me, and I just don't love the commoditization of like the Zorro character and like Antonio Banderas poking fun at it, like that movie wasn't as great as it was, or you know, people kind of being like, oh yeah, those movies aren't as good because they only remember Legend of Zorro. And I just wonder if there's a little bit of me being like, I want Zorro again. I want like a real, like a serious kind of like revisiting of that world and that universe and a reclaiming of that. But we just get these Puss in Boots movies, and I'm just like, I don't know. I have my own personal issues to sort out. I don't know how to send an email to Antonio. Like it's in drafts.
You don't think at some point they're going to do like a soft reboot of Mask of Zorro, where
they say it every year?
Antonio Banderas is going to be kind of where Anthony Hopkins' role as a mentor.
Yeah, there have been 4 or 5, maybe 6 or 7 Zorro projects in the works for so many years. A total revamp, Zorro with zombies. I mean, they're always dangling that carrot in front of us.
Didn't they also have Django versus Zorro or something?
They did, and we all knew that wasn't going to happen. That was just people having fun on the internet as usual.
Sure.
But yeah, so that's my main hang up, and I'm sorry to be a bit of a bear, you know. But I'm glad you guys liked it. The movie.
Which of the three bears are you?
Probably the Ray Winstone one. He's the one who has the most issues to work out. But you know what? I am curious about this. And I genuinely think that even though I didn't click with this one, you know, maybe I will on a different watch, but they should keep doing it if it's working for most people, right? So do you guys think that there's going to be another Puss in Boots? Do you think that the next thing will be Puss in Boots and Shrek? Like, what do you think the future holds for the Puss in Boots franchise?
I think it's time for the long-awaited Shrek 5. I mean, that's just me personally, but
I
think the end of, without spoiling anything, I think the end of this movie points towards that as being what's next.
What do we get with Shrek 5? We get Shrek as like the kind of middle-aged dad, you know, his kids are teenagers giving him shit.
Well, maybe he's fed up with live-action remakes or something. I don't know.
Maybe Shrek 5 is live-action. Like, he's fed up with live-action. It's going to be live.
And it's never explained.
Yeah.
Are he and Donkey, like, not talking anymore, and it's part of the mystery of the movie, and it's about, like, trying to, like, reclaim the friendships you had years ago, but you can't because you can't let go of the pain and silence in between. Puss in Boots tries to bring them together. Who would have thought?
It's interesting to think about what the next Shrek movie is going to do in terms of fairy tale stuff.
Because also the animation, are they going to do the house Shrek style? If we're talking about house styles, are they going to go with the Puss in Boots style? What's happening?
I think it'll be similar to the Puss in Boots style, but not as stylized, because during all the action sequences, obviously, in Puss in Boots The Last Wish, it switched to the lower frame rate of Into the Spider-Verse. I don't think it'll be quite that wacky, but I do think that they're going to bring that kind of really more colorful painterly style to the next DreamWorks movies.
Matt's nodding, which is a good sign because he's a bit of an animation expert.
I mean, this isn't, to be clear, it's not based on anything. I just think what Chris is saying sounds like it makes sense to me.
Does that make sense to you, Will Ashton? You look like you're deep in thought. You haven't said a thing.
I want the guys to say their piece.
What do you think?
Yeah,
what's your crystal ball tell you?
Yeah, I can see, you know, some version where Shrek has become complacent. You know, he's been a dad, like you said, for however many years. His kids are kind of, you know, becoming, you know, teenagers, or they're maybe even becoming young adults at this point.
He and Fiona are sleeping in different rooms.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't know how exactly that would factor into...
I've got it.
Oh, no.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, Will. And I want to clarify, this is not a movie I've seen, but this is 40, but with Shrek.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that.
that would be great. At the same time, though, we've already had a movie where Shrek has become complacent with being a dad.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Is that like I don't know if they'll do that per se. I mean, it would have to be more. Well, in that film, he's not complacent with being a dad. It's him, you know, feeling like he's having a midlife crisis.
He's growing up too. Yeah, he wants to get back to being young. But this is a different thing. This is more of just what's the point of life?
Shrek 5 is going to be like another road movie.
Aren't they all? Except Shrek Forever After?
Exactly. Yeah. Maybe it's going to be like
he's got to go on a quest.
Shrek with the Purge.
Let's find like the best, like let's give him a Groundhog's Day thing. Let's give him like what are the different subgenres? What about a Shrek heist?
I'll have to send you guys this. It's somebody had a picture of Shrek, but he's wearing like a purple Joker suit and white makeup and the blood red lips. He's like, "Donkey, ask me how I got my scars."
I got it, guys.
What?
Fast Five, but with Shrek. Yeah. And it would even have the return of, you guessed it, the fairy godmother.
I thought you were going to say Dwayne the Rock Johnson.
That too?
Yeah.
He's never done any of
them. Dwayne the John Roxon is playing the fairy godmother.
Yeah, I'm good with that. No, but I actually think that would be kind of perfect. Like a heist Shrek kind of movie. You get away from the quest, but you still have kind of a quest. And you can like reunite these characters. We got to track down Puss in Boots. We need him. Donkey's over here. You get to like have fun seeing like where these characters have been at all these years. It's the same formula. You could even do the thing with the bank vault.
Yeah, I would say maybe not Fast Five, but instead just like Ocean's 11.
Well, that is like Fast Five, isn't it? It's taking Ocean's 11, but like mixing it with the Fast and Furious universe. That's what made Fast Five so good, right?
Sure, sure. But that, I'm saying I feel like Shrek would not take the detour of cars, but instead would just be a heist movie. But I do like that as like a way to bring everybody back together and like see what everybody's been up to. But what would they be stealing in this scenario?
They don't have to steal something, right? Because a heist can be all kinds of different things. It could be sort of like, you know, it could be like an Inception thing where we have to, I don't know.
No, they would definitely be stealing some kind of like fairy tale artifact or something.
Probably. They would probably go the MacGuffin route because that's safe.
Inshrection,
yes.
They could be trying to like, you know, kidnap like somebody. We'll figure it out once we get the writers and the scripts in, but get me my coffee. Like we got to finish this.
Donkey, the dream is collapsing.
Dragon is their getaway driver.
Yeah. he must like be has afraid.
Tattoos and like smoking a cigarette.
Yeah. You mustn't be afraid to fart a little bigger, darling.
I think we cracked the code, guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is there
Shrek 5 is Inception with Shrek. I like it.
Yeah.
Any last things you guys want to say? Any last wishes before we play the Rotten Tomatoes game?
I mean, I feel like we haven't really said very much about the last wish.
I feel like Chris, I really need to like kind of get his thoughts out.
Oh, please do, Chris. Yeah. Take the stand.
No, in terms of what you had asked earlier about, you know, seeing the movies, trailers and stuff, I was like, whatever. I was very pleased with the animation style. I was like, oh, that looks really cool. But it was kind of like a movie where it's like, oh, I'll just see it when it comes on streaming. But then, you know, for the podcast, I went out and watched it. And before I'd watched it, I saw all the reviews and stuff. And I remember specifically IGN said that it was the Shrek universe's answer to Logan. I was like, come on, guys. Really? Like, IGN frequently lays it on very thick, whatever their opinion is. But then I watch it, and I was like, this is legitimately a really good movie. I absolutely loved it. And I shared a few of these thoughts on It Ain't Ogre, but I think that the level of maturity with the theme and the fact that it approached it very level-headed, it didn't make the theme of Puss's adventure too goofy. Like I think in a decade earlier, it would have been played it a lot more goofy with his journey. But this time it was actually a lot more serious. And actually the thing that robbed me of my bingo was One of my squares was, you think Puss is dead, like towards the end or whatever, but that didn't end up happening. But I think the whole thing with his journey and stuff, I think, was really, really good. I thought that I liked that Pepito, when Puss is having the panic attack and Pepito lays his head on his chest and does his therapy dog thing, I thought that was a good callback to when Pepito said he wanted to be a therapy dog. I thought the Big Bad Wolf was an incredible villain. I think that is top-tier DreamWorks villain. Everything about him...
Although, like, is he really the Big Bad Wolf? Because we've seen the Big Bad Wolf in the Shrek movies, but is he supposed to be another kind of wolf character archetype?
I think he's supposed to be the Big Bad Wolf. Because the... Because it's...
He doesn't wear a dress anymore.
Doesn't wear a dress anymore. He's upgraded. But the wolf from... Shrek, the Little Red Riding Hood wolf, that's not the Big Bad Wolf, that's just the wolf, right? Or a wolf, or whatever.
I think it is the Big Bad Wolf, because he, in Shrek 2, blows air like he's blowing down the little pig's house. I think he's both.
Oh, yeah.
And I actually thought that the wolf in this movie, I mean, not to spoil, I won't spoil, but he kind of clarifies who he is at the end and says it's not a gimmick and it's not a metaphor,
yeah.
But he is who he is. So I don't know.
I loved how effective the animation was in building him up as a horrifying character. Like, I think one of my favorite moments in the movie is when Puss goes into the bathroom of the bar and he closes the door, and then the wolf is whistling, and then his shadow is looming up through the crack of the door. Like, that was incredibly effective. Also, when they're escaping from the town. And Puss in Boots spills the gold. He's like, "Oh, gift from Puss in Boots!" And then the wolf is whistling again, like in the crowd. And there's all the red around him, and he's got the two coins over his eyes, like the River Styx. Like, the imagery around him was just great. What else? I loved the element of the map to the Wishing Star. Whoever was touching it would terraform the forest to what that person's whole deal was. And then there's a sequence where they're at the cottage, and then Goldilocks' pitchfork pins the map to a thing, and then everything just kind of like freezes in place. There's big action sequences where everything is floating in air and they're jumping around and everything. Just the creativity with the animation and the art design was really fun. And I know, John, you said you did not like John Mulaney's performance as Jack Horton.
Nah. Couldn't stand it. I didn't think the voice matched the character. I think it took me out of the movie. I was like, it's just John Mulaney. Okay.
Coroner, right? It's not Horton. Right?
I think he's hungry for Tim Hortons.
I was going to say, I think you're thinking of Tim Hortons.
Horner. Honestly, I'm baffled that you didn't like it as much as I did.
I was going to say with that, I felt like that felt true to Shrek, and that, like, there was no, like, redeeming quality to him. Like, there's nothing where it's like, oh, he's misunderstood. Oh, he, like, you know, like, they even kind of play up the idea of him, like, having a tragic backstory is just kind of a goof anyway. He's still, like, this entitled a-hole of a guy.
He's, and then
and you have, like, an actual, like, iconic Disney character, but now DreamWorksified. And I guess I can say what that is now. It's Jiminy Cricket, who I think is quite easily the best and funniest character in this film, who is just trying his damnedest to, like, rationalize, the hidden good qualities of Jack Horner. He's just like, you just misunderstood.
You're not really going to shoot that puppy in the face, are you?
I thought the decision to make him Jimmy Stewart was incredible. I thought that was very effective and very funny. I know Matt also agrees with me on this one. So.
Oh, I loved it. Yeah.
I'm so happy that wasn't spoiled for me, or that wasn't even wasn't any of the marketing. Like, he was consistently one of the funniest gags the entire movie.
You're going to shoot a puppy?
In the face. Watch me. Also, we talked about it on It Ain't Ogre, but, like, the body count in this movie is so high.
Yeah. it's not counting the eight lives that Puss in Boots loses throughout the course of the film.
It's random flashbacks. People just get killed. Like, my favorite was when the flower just sucks the flesh off that dude's skeleton. I was like, oh my God.
Yeah, not only the flesh, but like his whole... Everything.
Just like sucks it clean.
Yeah, I mean, the baker's dozen doesn't end up the best for wear in this film. And because of that, the body count is well into the double digits. And I thought that was, you know, pretty surprising in a fun way. I don't know how parents are going to feel about that.
I've seen a lot of differing things on Reddit. Like, people are saying, like, oh, can I take my kids to it or whatever? And somebody was like, oh, don't take young kids because the Big Bad Wolf was going to terrify them. And somebody else is like, oh, I took my 5-year-old and she thought the Big Bad Wolf was scary and stuff, but she loved it otherwise. But I don't know. It's kind of, me personally,
people's kids are different.
Yeah, no, I was talking to my brother-in-law and he has a couple of young girls and I said, maybe watch it before you show it to them. Just to make sure, because they get scared by like certain things.
I say let the kids be scared. They need it.
Let the kids be scared.
Yeah, it's formative stuff.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of getting to what I'm saying, though. Is like, I like this movie is willing to like be like morose and have like these sort of dark qualities. That it does remind me genuinely of the films like of the 90s or like around my actual youth, where they would tackle like mortality and these things in a way it, you know, obviously is directed at children, but not, you know, kiddifying them entirely and like, you know, giving it a weight and a heaviness. And I think, Chris, you brought up the scene in our ogre episode, but that scene where Puss in Boots is having a panic attack in the woods and like, what's the dog's name? I forget.
Perito.
Yeah, Perito. It's like kind of a wordless exchange in a way where they're just kind of able to be there for each other and Puss in Boots is able to live in the moment and appreciate, you know, like what's happening. I thought that was very beautifully directed and I thought that was really effective. And I feel like those type of scenes have been largely lost from the previous Shrek films, like outside of the first one. And I was just really taken by that moment in particular.
Yeah, that hit me pretty hard emotionally. In terms of like having recently lost a pet and having a friend who recently lost a pet and then having, you know, a pet that can be comforting like that. I was like, that was a really just in terms of just the animation, the direction was a really, really well directed moment. Also, the way that the movie portrayed Puss in Boots' panic attacks was extremely visceral and really well put together.
I'm surprised because I could have sworn, Chris, that you were more of a cat person. Because of Cat in the Hat?
I am. No, that was the pet that I lost recently.
Oh. I was just saying because you liked Perito so much, so.
I mean, yeah, but,
Equal opportunity. You love them both.
I'm an animal person. Yeah. The other night I was got something out of my car. I parked on the street, and then there was this cat just wandering around. And I got down, you know, close to the ground and it ran over to me and was rubbing up against me and purring and everything. And I picked it up and it was purring. Didn't have a collar. I don't know if it was a stray or whatever, but I instantly connected with this animal. The only animal I haven't connected with was my friend from college, his little corgi, who hated everybody that wasn't his dad. But no, it's animals in general. I love them all.
But yeah, I mean, I'm kind of surprised that you... initially, John, I thought I was going to be in line with you, where it's like, Perito is going to be such an annoying, you know, little dumb character. But he ended up, like, I was afraid they're going to, like, Olaf him throughout the movie. But, like, he ended up being a lot more, you know, vital to the story. And, like, his perspective is key to Puss's growth. But also, like, he doesn't feel like an accessory. Like, he provides, you know, deep emotional significance to the characters, and I feel like that's like one of those things that I don't know if it was deliberate.
I don't know. It reminded me too much of Donkey, but not as funny. I think that's what it keeps coming down to. It's just like
I don't think his character is
very charming. Yeah,
I mean, outside of him being like positive and trying to see the good in things, I'm not quite sure how he's similar to Donkey
and always wanting attention, sticking around where he doesn't belong.
I don't
belong.
Know. I feel like that's kind of a superficial comparison.
I mean, I kind of see what John is saying. Like, Perito is kind of a donkey proxy, but I do also think that he had a service to the plot that was very essential. Like, you, if you took him out of the story, it wouldn't work anymore. I did predict, though, that Donkey is going to hate Perito when they meet.
Why is that?
Because Perito is the new cute thing. It's gonna be like the, it's gonna be like Puss in Boots.
Oh, great! So the heist movie is gonna be like Shrek 2. Shrek 2 kind of has like a little mini heist.
Actually, anyway. I was gonna say in regards to what Will said with the movie being okay with taking risks and being a little more adult. I've got a pitch: Shrek 5, Gremlins.
I mean, that's always a good idea. So, yeah.
Why not bring Joe Dante back in?
I know they did Shrek the Halls, but let's just do another Christmas special. I'm down if you are.
Shrek for an hour Hanukkah. And a half.
For an hour and 45 minutes.
Okay.
Matt, you've been, you know, characteristically quiet, gathering your thoughts, your notes. What do you think? How do you want to eviscerate my point of view?
I don't want to. Oh. I honestly just, I agree with Chris, and actually, Will mentioned the bingo cards, and one of my squares was that I thought that the new dog character was going to be annoying, and I did not cross that one off because I liked
Burrito. I can see you at the end of the movie, like your pen hovering over it, and you shaking mm-hmm. your head and being like, they did it.
No. Yeah. No, they're exactly. And
putting
and,
the top back on your pen and tears going.
It was that exact. I cried. No. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I think like overall I liked the movie. I think your read of it is entirely valid. I don't think any of the criticisms you made are ones that are like what's the word I'm looking for? Like I don't like
go ahead, uncharitable.
I don't know if it's uncharitable. I think it's bad more just the, like, yeah, exactly. There's no like bad faith. Like they all seem very valid. But I don't know. I was positive on the movie. I will say, I mean, it's been, what, 2 weeks, Will, since we saw it? 2.5?
It's been.
Yeah.
1 week.
And I will note that, like, I haven't thought too much about it since then. So, you know, take that for what it's worth. That's part of why I've been a little quieter on this one, because I don't feel like I have a ton to say beyond that. I liked it, and it was pretty good, and I thought that the animation was really good and the art was good, but, like, I don't know. I like, kind of forgot about Goldilocks and the Three Bears. I wish that there had been more from them. But
I saw it a little over a month ago, and, yeah, I'm kind of with you, Matt. I am struggling. Like, you guys are mentioning stuff that happened in the movie. I'm like, I'll take your word for it. I generally don't remember that well, which is, that is partly why I'm kind of open to a second watch, because I'm a little sad, guys. I want to have fun with the Puss in Boots movie. Are you kidding me? This should
I hope
be my
you like it more the second time. I think you will.
Maybe the second time it's got to be 40X.
And maybe it's just recency bias for me, but I loved it. I was absolutely buzzing about it when I got out, and not to
that smile hasn't faded, Chris. I mean, as soon as we logged in, I mean, it was still there.
And not to do apples to oranges, but like I got out of Avatar: The Way of Water, and I was like, okay, I'm gonna go home now. Whereas out of Puss in Boots: The Last Wish, I was like, that was a really, really great time.
Texting your parents?
I mean, texting my parents. I did text my parents. Or my mom, anyway. But
it's like, I'm sorry, I haven't been the son that you.
I mean, Chris, I think you made a point to see Puss in Boots 2 before you saw Avatar 2.
I did. I was vocal about prioritizing. Yeah.
Why?
It. Yeah.
Because is there like a strategy we're employing, or
because everybody's seeing Avatar 2, be like, "Oh my god, Avatar 2! Oh my god!" And I'm like, "No, Puss in Boots 2."
Guys, you don't understand. This is Puss's last life.
Well, you know what, Chris? I did the same thing in 2008 with two summer movies. You want to know what they were? Everyone was like, oh, you got to watch this movie. And I didn't. I watched the other one. You know what they were?
If I Google 2008 movies, can I guess?
I'll give you two guesses.
Okay. So, John,
Will knows
when
this.
No, I don't. I mean, the joke I was going to make was...
We talked about this.
I mean... I'm assuming you're referring to that weekend that The Dark Knight came out.
Well, you're giving it away. Chris was going to guess.
You decided, no. I need to see what's up with these space chimps.
I did see Space Chimps in the theater, but it was not the opening weekend of Dark Knight.
I'm going to say you saw...
Isn't Andy Samberg in Space Chimps?
He is, yes. Yeah. Terrible movie, by the way.
Was it the same
Never
weekend?
Saw it.
What's the word? I can't think of unwords either, thanks to Matt. Unredeemable, that's it.
I mean, Chris, you know what the other movie that came out the week of The Dark Knight besides Space Chimps?
Wanted?
Nope.
No.
What was it?
Well, should we just
tell
him?
What was the counter programming that weekend?
Spirit?
I'll give you a hint.
We're building up to this very awkwardly.
No, just tell me, whatever.
It was Mamma Mia.
Yeah, there you go.
Oh.
You were butchering it, Will. I had to step in. I watched Mamma Mia before Dark Knight.
That.
So there you go. So yeah, all that to say, Chris, you're in shared company. Just like you watched Puss in Boots, The Last Wish before Avatar, The Way of Water. Yeah. Is there anything else? Are you guys ready to play Rotten Tomatoes?
Yeah.
All right. The Rotten Tomatoes game, America's third favorite game show. We dropped in the rankings, but we'll make it back.
What overtook us?
Just a lot of like internet, you know, a couple forums, a couple our subreddit went, you know, a little gonzo over something.
And oddly enough, The Price is Right.
Hmm.
So we got
canceled. That's always been our dark nemesis. All right, guys, we have 131 reviews counted for Puss in Boots Last Wish. Here it is. We'll start with Matt Serafini. You get the first guess. What do you think it is? What do you think the critic score is?
Oh, boy. Okay. Critic score for Puss in Boots The Last Wish.
I'll give you a hint.
87.
Oh, I was going to say I'll give you a hint. It's a number, but I messed up. Mm. I did it too late. 87 is Matt's
87.
Guess. Okay, let's go to Chris. Chris Sheridan, what do you think?
Well, I already know what it is, so I don't know if it's fair for me to say.
Okay, then we'll go to Will first, then, and then you can go, Chris.
Well, last I had heard, this was like over a week ago, it was at 97% because people were saying it was the highest rated movie with Florence Pugh, overshining like Lady Macbeth and Midsommar and all, and Little Women and all that.
Even Don't Worry, Darling?
Yeah,
even Outlaw King.
Yeah, but I think it
even that might, wrestling movie that she was
fighting with my family was actually pretty good.
Yeah, I was gonna say John likes that movie a good bit. I like it.
I never saw it.
It's all
even
right,
more than Black Widow.
Sure.
All right, you can go. Sorry.
I don't think it's that high right now, but I think it's not far from it. I'm gonna say 95%.
All right, and Chris Sheridan, what's your guess?
95%.
No, because he knows what it is. It's 95. All right. So then Matt wins that one because he did it with the least amount of help.
Oh, boy.
Okay.
I guessed it right despite having outdated information.
Sure you did. Well, all right. Audience score. We have 1,000 plus verified ratings. It's always a tough one. Always tough. We'll start this time with Chris. What do you think, Chris?
94.
Okay. Next up, Mr. Ashton.
I'm going to say 98.
Will's going high. What about Matt Serafini?
96.
Oh, boy. Well, none of you are dead on, but Chris was the closest because it's 93.
Mm, okay.
Nice.
Yeah, should have done. Speaking of Price is Right, you should have done Price is Right.
Well,
rules.
The joke I was going to tell Matt is like, bet $1.
There you go.
Yeah, but there you go.
Okay. And then let's go into Letterboxd. Or actually, I forgot to check if it has CinemaScore. I'll check real quick. And it does. All right, here we go.
We'll
start with Will. Oh, yeah, okay.
no need to introduce me, John. I'm going to guess straight A.
Okay, what about you, Matt?
A minus.
And Christopher Moltisanti.
Can I do half of a minus?
Half of a minus? What does that mean?
A minus and a half. I'm going to say A minus.
Will Ashton wins this one.
Dang
it. We should have had
I'm so
more
bad
faith.
At these games every time. Is there a Cinemaholic score sheet for like no. all of them? Because there should be, if not.
We've got stats, baseball cards.
I've never won.
Everybody has a Will Ashton one, but I was just everybody saying, well, wants
it. It's like, whose line is it anyway? The points don't really matter in the long run.
I disagree, but you know.
I think it'd be fun to keep track of, though, at least.
Yeah. Do you ever see when they somebody in the original run for Whose Line actually tracked who won based on the amount of points that they won?
Too bad we don't have a listener as obsessed as that who would actually go through our archives. I mean, we haven't even done the Rotten Tomatoes game that long, but
right. It would be fun. Yeah. I mean,
you could start keeping track as of 2023. Just a thought.
I mean, at the end of the year, we can be like, here's every time that Matt Serafini was completely wrong about his scores.
And then we hold it up and it's a blank page.
Yeah. The only
I would wear it with honor.
The only trouble with that is that like the numbers would be skewed because I played it more than most others, but I would be curious like what the percentage would be.
Well, the ratio is probably not in your favor in that case, isn't it?
I guess not. I don't
you
know.
You do pretty well though. I mean, let's do Letterboxd so we can get you guys back to class. All right. 0 to 5, Letterboxd score. We'll do Matt first this time. We'll end where we started.
So it's like out of 5, right?
Yeah, and it's decimal points.
And it's decimal points. I'm going to say 4.6.
Okay, and then Will Ash.
I'm going to say 3.7.
I did forget to say that it has 39,000 watches, which is not super high for this kind of release. But all right, and then Chris Sheridan.
4.4.
Okay. Wait, what was your guess again, Will?
Mine was 3.7.
All right. Chris Sheridan wins the Rotten Tomatoes game this week because he got that one right, and I think that means he wins it all.
How much? What was the score?
2.
4.2, okay.
Oh, 4.2,
he's the closest, yeah.
Nicely done.
So there you go, Chris. Chris, you know, your trading card's looking pretty sick. I mean, there you are, like, you know, getting ready for your swing the bat.
Chris is making out like a bandit. He liked the movie the most. He won the game. And for what it's worth...
What a great day for Chris.
I think he might be the MVP of this Ogre finale we just did.
Really? Yeah, that's right. So you want to plug that before we say goodbye to the fans?
What was that?
I mean, I guess you guys already did plug it, but is there anything else you wanted to plug for the
Yeah, I mean, we didn't really get into what it is. I mean, people know it's the...
We're sure that the mystery of it is as enticing as...
Well, I mean, if you made it this far in this rambling conversation of ours, I think you owe it to yourself to listen to the Ogre finale. You know, it's the wrap up for season 6. We've been talking about Shrek 2 all year. Without giving too much away about the finale, it's a variety show in the vein of The Muppets and Breaking 2 Electric Boogaloo, and it's a musical. It's the project I've been wanting to do for nearly the entire run of Any Ogre Toads Ogre. We finally did it, primarily thanks to Matt and Chris, of course. But,
and I'm part of it in a small way.
Yes, that is true.
John, look out for John's performance. It's a good one.
Yeah. So, and fans of the show will certainly get a big kick out of it, both the show and Any Ogre. So, check that out if you like the show, and I hope you like the episode.
Will Ashton, what are we going to talk about next week? Are we finally going to talk about the whale?
Oh, we're talking Megan, right?
Oh, is Megan going to... Yeah, I'm seeing that on, like, Thursday.
I mean, I think that's going to be a big smash.
Okay.
I'm so excited for that movie.
Yeah, so I mean, it's going to be fun.
Allison Williams is back.
Yeah, back in the horror genre.
Allison Williams.
Yeah, that's right. Well, you know what? She was in Perfection not that long ago.
Oh, the lady that makes the doll or whatever.
You're a doll, Chris.
I did like the Perfection, but no, I'm so hyped for Megan just because... I think James Wan is one of my favorite creatives in terms of really kind of understanding and leaning into the tone of what he's producing.
Yeah. Are we not going to talk about White Noise, Will, that hit Netflix this past week? I saw it a while back. My review for it is on the public website in between drafts.
I'm not opposed to it. I mean, you know, I certainly want to catch up on a lot of movies that have recently come out. But I feel like it would be a fool's errand not to capitalize on the buzz for this Megan movie that's supposed to be the first big hit of 2023.
Okay. Well, I guess that for now will be the plan. Don't forget to find our show, Cinemaholics, on cinemaholics.com, or, you know, connect with us on social media. Of course, our Twitter and our Facebook page are in the show notes. You can also join our Discord. We had a few Cinemaholics listeners join the Discord this past week. We sent out the invite, but we have a whole Discord thing. It's not just for Cinemaholics. It's also for Mad Men Men. It's also for In Between Drafts in general. So we have all kinds of stuff on there, like games and anime and anime. And I know, you know, Chris and Matt, you're more than welcome to join too. We'd love to have you. So there you go. Thanks again, guys, for coming on to the show and hanging out with
Always
us.
Always a pleasure.
What's the Discord?
Well, I'll send you the link, Chris.
Yeah, send it to me too. I'll join it for sure.
I'm going to join that.
Yeah, and anybody who's listening, you're invited to join. Can't wait to have you. Can't wait to bug you for the rest of my life. So, all right. I did try to talk to Will on there, but Will wasn't logged in. He's not checking the Discord.
I was going to say, nobody else is bugging me. I mean, I might have been the MVP of the cast for tonight, but I'm going to bed alone.
We got to get Will's attention somehow. But okay. Thanks again for coming on, guys. And thank you, listeners, for listening. From the Internet, California, I'm John Negroni.
From Pennsylvania, I'm Weshin.
Chris from Colorado.
I didn't know if we were supposed to.
Live from New York. It's Saturday night.
And remember, kids.
It ain't ogre.
Till it's ogre.
I've always wanted to do that.